You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome. It is the Anfield Wrap. It is the morning of Monday, May the 22nd. I say that because literally when things are recorded at this stage of a season does tend to matter. I've got Jake Nolan, I've got Neil Jones, and I've got Mo Stewart. A pleasure to have all three of them here and present to talk about Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 1, and all matters pertaining to it. And I'll go to Neil Jones first. For me, the thing that defines the game is Villa decide they're going to have a really high line. Risk and reward, play out from the back, and then they stop doing that, over, I think, after the period. But Villa's risk and reward, I don't think necessarily because they get it absolutely right, but for me, as much about the fact that Liverpool don't actually perform all that well, Liverpool's time and being off more than anything, but ultimately Villa's risk and reward comes off for them.
Yeah, I think Liverpool being poor was as much to do with it, but they had the right players probably to just make the most of it. You know, they had aggressive defenders, good footballer midfielders and players who can run, and Liverpool have struggled against them quite a lot this season, haven't they? Not so much in recent weeks, but generally throughout the season. And I think you saw really with the goal was obviously come from that, Liverpool not being switched on, Villa being switched on, the penalty come from that, you know, that very felt very autumn, didn't it? That sort of that move, you know. I think I've seen that a few times. Crystal Palace reminded me of the Crystal Palace goal that Zaha scored. That was in August, wasn't it? But I just thought Liverpool looked. I don't know. It's hard because you sort of think you can just hang it on the fact that it was quite a sentimental day, and you always remember the Gerrard farewell game, and they weren't really at it. But I actually just think Liverpool. It was a sort of performance Liverpool produced a fair few times this season. They just weren't quite. But very good.
I'll come back to your first one, Neil. I just think part of that is that literally I think four of your key five or six performers just don't play that well. You know, I think Salah has a really frustrating afternoon in that he gets on the ball an awful lot, and he gets on the ball, you'd like to think, where he'd want to be on the ball an awful lot. You know, Liverpool do get it to him in those areas. I think it's all right, given how good he's been for seven games for Trent Alexander-Arnold to have a little bit of a bum one for a while, but no one else really steps up. Diaz, if there's a question around the manager's selection, you know, he doesn't look quite fully fit, and ultimately it was always going to be a difficult day. And then I think Konate just has his first slightly, you know, he concedes the penalty. And those four roles, whoever's playing them, but with three of them, with Salah, with Trent, and with Konate, it's been very much those three. You know, you need them to play well, and if they don't, it just makes your afternoon a lot harder.
Yeah, I think so. I think that about Salah. He feels a little bit now like Salah's become a player that is better when there's no space. It's really, really instinctive stuff. When he's got sort of space and time to run, I don't feel as confident in him producing something. I feel like he sort of is a little bit, I don't know, he's just a little bit off sometimes. But when he's in the tight areas, when it's sort of right on him, and you know, in the penalty area and has to do it, he's as sharp and instinctive and excellent as ever. But yeah, he was played pretty well, wasn't he, by Luka Dean. By Mings obviously covering as well. Yeah, Trent, I think Trent was the big one that sort of Liverpool lost that ability to just set the rhythm. I looked at the stats, and the midfielders really didn't complete as many passes as you get used to. I think Curtis was 28 passes, and you're thinking that's
way
like,
down.
That's like, you know, you'd expect three times that probably in a game at home, at least double. So yeah, I think that speaks a little bit. It was a lot of the possession was back at Virgil and Konate, wasn't it, and moving it across and sort of trying to find that way. But it didn't really feel like there was a lot of belief in what they were doing.
I think that Jake, we'll start with the belief points. You know, I've got down here, Liverpool's timing seemed just off, and what I mean, I think sometimes when you play a game, any game really, but when you, you know, when you're playing an intense game of football, if the first three or four things don't necessarily work for you, you almost need a bit of a hard reset to go back and go from there. And that never really comes. The game goes bitty. And, you know, for me, it was one of those where I was watching players underhit one pass and then overhit the next one. Put it too wide the first time and then put it too narrow the second. One of them where you'd end up sort of second-guessing yourself all the time. And that can be because of the way Villa are closing space, closing lanes, all that sort of stuff. You know, you do have to show respect for the opposition in amongst there. But it just seemed to me one of them where, I don't want to say the yips, because the yips feels like it's a bit too much of a mental thing, if you know what I mean, but just days where, you know, in all sports, rhythm never comes, and it seemed to me like a day where Liverpool were just so short of rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can make quite a strong case to why we see what we saw. Ultimately, I think we know that the team and the manager looks at blocker games, and I think they would have been looking at that one going, that's where we could potentially struggle, you know. And there's a bit of credit that's got to be given to Villa, especially when they go one up. You know, there's a reason why that fella's won loads of trophies, in the sense that he knows how to do that. He knows how to be a bit of a bastard. He knows how to take this thing out of the game, which we saw in a lot. And ultimately, he knows how to go away from home. But what I thought with Liverpool is, I was worried about this. I think we'd done the Thursday night in the big house on Thursday, didn't we? And I was worried that potentially the emotion of things would override. And I understand what Neil's saying there in terms of not necessarily sure it was just that. I don't think it was just that. But you can't say that's not a factor. You just can't say that's not a factor, especially with football clubs that's emotional as ours and players as big as theirs. And the fact that it did feel like it was such an occasion before, you know, when there was a game to be won. And I think the other thing to consider there as well is with the question about Arnold is, I'm loving seeing what I'm seeing, just seeing the kid express himself in Liverpool playing brilliantly and him being the playmaker again. But something I have been conscious of is the good teams will work that out, how to stop that. And I think we probably saw the first team do that on Saturday.
He turned away from a few of them early on really well, Mo. That's the bit I thought the way he was working his space was actually really impressive. What then doesn't work is the next pass or the pass after that. And that's where I feel as though, again, he starts well in terms of the technical stuff, in terms of his brain, in terms of the speed of his feet. But then the passing just doesn't quite work for him. And I think that's, you've got to allow that to happen. And for me, you know, one of the things that I take from the game is we could have done with another couple of players stepping up on a day where Salah and Trent Alexander-Arnold just didn't quite have it in the back pocket.
100%. I think for Trent, this is the biggest test of it he's had. And I think I was always going to say that before this game anyway. If you look at the teams we've played in this run, Aston Villa are comfortably the best team we've played. And I would include Arsenal in that because of how we are playing, how Aston Villa are playing at the moment. And the fact that Emery as a coach and as a tactician has had all this time to look at it. And let's face it, we've won all these games, but with the exception of the two teams who are probably going to get relegated, there's been peril in all of those games. There's been times where we've been on the edge. And a good tactician with a very well-structured drilled team like Villa will be able to drill right into all of those crevices. I said on the team talk that Klopp would actually might enjoy being up high so we can see exactly what Emery's doing. And I tell you, the tape of this game is going to be used a lot over the course of now, between now and the start of next season, to say, okay, this is what can go wrong with it if we don't do it well. The point about having other players is really kind of borne out here, because to be honest, we kind of need players like Villa had. Like, Villa looked like we used to look. Like the high line, the intense pressing, the compacting of the space and the relying on the turnover of the ball to be able to get you up the pitch, and then the speed and the quickness on counter-attack to be able to score the goals. This is exactly what we used to do. And the fact that it works so well kind of proves some of what we've lost. And when you look at the way that this midfield box is supposed to work, it's supposed to have the two guys at the top who can create, who can also score. And we looked at the way that they were trying to do it. Jones has been great in terms of arriving late. But again, if you're a good tactician with a good, well-drilled team, you can counter for that.
And also the delivery is just not very good, which on three or four occasions, the delivery just wasn't very good, Mo. You know, there was. I kept thinking, Jones is about to get in here. Jones is about to get in. And on those times where we had worked the space, the ball into him just wasn't quite right.
And that's kind of a product of being put under more pressure in all play, I think. I think it's one of those things where when you know that you're under pressure, when you know a team against you is playing well and denying you space, everything becomes a little bit more tight and tense and hard. And I think it was one of those games where there were lots of little percentages of things that kind of just tipped the needle away from us. We've mentioned, obviously, the emotion of the occasion. We've mentioned the fact that this is Aston Villa, who've played really well. mention the fact that, as I say, Klopp's not on the sidelines, so it's a whole different kind of process, and you know what players are like with their routines, so it's going to be different, so that's going to make a little difference. And let's face it, the fact is, from the between the last game and now, the chance of us actually getting into the Champions League have dramatically dropped because the other teams have won.
Yeah.
So it's become a little bit less like, okay, we're on the march, we're getting there. Now it's like, oh, well, it's not really going to happen. So, and you add all those things together, and then you take a team like Aston Villa, who are really good at starting football matches. I think a quarter of their goals have been in the first 15 minutes. Like, that's definitely a tactic. And you put that together and it becomes a perfect storm, and they've got the initiative. They don't score the penalty, but then they get the goal. And then from there, we're always playing behind and it becomes tighter and tenser.
The tighter and tenser part, Neil, combined with the refereeing, the timekeeping questions, Villa's tactics. You know, Villa went to Old Trafford and it was a really low incident expected goals game, but United scored the goal and went 1-0 up. One of the things that hit me when you were discussing before about the autumn, I think one of the things that goes against Liverpool in the autumn, whether or not they're playing well or playing badly, they keep ending up in situations where they've got scoreboard pressure. They feel at the start of the season, before they've kicked off in games, that they're already 1-0 down, I think. And I think that's a mentality that that in the past has served them well, but I think at the start of this season became a problem for them. Here they end up 1-0 down. And I wouldn't say they're ever absolutely frantic, but I think they do become fraught as the game develops and as the incidents in the game develop and as the time wasting develops and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I don't know if any team does, but I don't think Liverpool handle there's a reason teams do this at Anfield more than other places, and I think it's Liverpool, and Liverpool fans don't handle it particularly well. I must have had it where I sit, people come out of the stadium. I reckon I've had it 6 or 7 times this season. Make sure you write about them today all this time. And I think, well, why? Because it's not legitimate, you know, like, as in, it's up to the referee to solve it. But that's why they're doing it, because you're going to be in this kind of mood. I think Liverpool get in a little bit of that way. I think one of the reasons teams do it, I was thinking about this over the weekend, I think they do it because it puts you off making a challenge. So I think it puts players off, and I think Liverpool got into the position where they didn't almost want to go and touch the Villa players because they thought, if I touch him here, that's another minute gone from the game. So almost let them play and we'll try and win it sort of as clean as you possibly can. I mean, that was just part of the game, really, wasn't it? You couldn't escape the fact that I think was it 14 minutes? Was it 19 minutes added?
It was 5 in the first half and it was 10 in the second.
Yeah,
that's
went,
the four,
but it
goes
over,
over,
yeah,
didn't
it? Yeah, so you're looking at sort of 18, 19 minutes of added time. It's quite rare, isn't it? You know, you've had it with Newcastle early in the season. Liverpool got away with it, didn't they, and won late. But I don't think anyone really felt like it was a sort of... They enjoyed it. They enjoyed it at the time, but it was a horrible game to sort of for the players. And I think it was pretty similar there. Well, I don't think they handled it at all.
I don't think, but one of my things on it, Neil, is I feel a little bit like, you know, and it's not for me to say, and Unai Emery's got his own things to sort out. But I feel a little bit like I think it made Villa less likely to win the game. I think there was a second there for them. It really feels to me, and I felt the same thing about Newcastle in there earlier in the season. And listen, you know, Newcastle have ended up almost certainly coming third or fourth. So, you know, they've been doing it all the way through the campaign. And I think there's a physical recovery thing in part of why Newcastle do it. It's such a breaking up the play. They're all big lads. And it's get the oxygen back in the body and take a minute and all that sort of stuff. And there can be conversations and there should be, and we can come on to that. But when that game against Newcastle, this one here against Villa, I just felt a little bit like if you had another 15, like the 15 you had that ended in your goal, you'd come out of here 2-0, it'd be 2-0, and then we'd really lose our minds.
Yeah, possibly, but then you've also, there's still, despite Liverpool's struggles, there's still that, everyone knows that there's that wave that can come, so you can just go bang, 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 and you're 3-1 down, you know, because you've committed
absolutely
a little bit. I think a lot of people still feel like if you're going to win at Anfield, you're going to win 1-0, or you're going to win by the odd goal.
You're going to win Leeds 1 early
in
the season.
I don't think anyone feels like they're going to come and sort of roast Liverpool, and I know Real Madrid did, but even then they had to weather, you know, a storm. Maybe that'll change. Maybe you might see a few teams saying, you know what, we can go and score 2 and 3 at Anfield. But I still think the home form has been pretty good this season, hasn't it, generally? And I think teams still feel like that's a big hurdle. It's just scoring a goal and then trying to defend it.
I'll come back onto the time wasting to have a proper sort of chat about it for 10 minutes, all of us together. It is obviously part of Villa's game plan, Mo. The other thing to point out is that we've just said, well, I said, and I'm going to presume you all agree, because none of you, we're outraged, Salah and Diaz don't play particularly well. If two of the front three don't play particularly well, and Jones and Henderson then lack a bit of spark, then it's very much a front five, that. And if you're basically looking at your front five, it's going to be difficult to create. Now, as I say, I thought that Jones's movement was still good. It was there or thereabouts if it had been played in. I actually think Henderson's movement's quite good, but everyone's decided it's just dummy runs. You know, there's an absolute desire not to feed the ball into him. Then over a period of time, the opposition go, oh, you're just not going to pass to him, so we'll let him go. Let's not worry about it too much. And, you know, for me, Jones brought goals against Leicester, and I think it would be... It'd be lax not to say that if Curtis Jones, for instance, played 38 league games for Liverpool in this shape, you can have a genuine confidence he'd hit double figures. You cannot have that confidence about Henderson. So if we're going to play like this, you know, I think you need more. I think you need more in general from Jones and Henderson. But Jones has got the idea that we know we've seen him stick it in the back of the net for Liverpool a great deal. You haven't seen that with Jordan, despite the fact that he scored some important goals and some really good goals. And if the spark isn't there, then you can really see where Liverpool need to find some from.
Definitely. And I mean, again, like I said before, the video of this game is going to be used a lot over pre-season. That might be used in the recruitment van as well to say, look, in this role, if we're going to play this role considerably a lot, we need more than this. And I think the conversation with Jordan has very much been, get us to the line in this position, and then we'll reassess it from the summer. Because I can see him working at the bottom of this box. I find it hard to see how he works at the top of the box. Like you say about how it was dummy runs, I think Villa probably would have predicted that beforehand, even without us making it so obvious. But his role in that team has always been from that position to try and cross balls into the back post. And we've seen him be good at it, but the problem is that everyone can kind of know when it's coming. So you can load up for it. And if the best thing he's good at in that position is then nullified, you're left with basically...
The thing he's good at, Neil, is I'm what I think will be difficult, because a lot of what you need from that position is the number 10 stuff that he's never really had in his career. So you need the stuff around the edge of the box. You need the stuff where he's inside Salah. What he offers, and why I think it will be a challenge of recruitment, what he offers really well is if Salah's coming in, he offers the ability to get round Salah the other side. And as Mo says, he can pick a cross out. Now, it doesn't quite work for him over the course of this game. First and foremost, he's never been the quickest, but he's always shown the ability to do that. And when Liverpool are thinking about recruiting, because I think it is about replacing in that position, you know, for me, it's crystal clear. It's not complicated. But you do need someone who can go inside, be clever, be a number 10, be a bit of a magician, maybe get you 10 goals. And you need someone who looks as though he can go outside and create the space there and exploit the space there. You are looking for, you know, you are looking for a bit of a... not quite a unicorn footballer, but you do need it to be a good one, because you get to see what Henderson does well in the role from time to time, and then also drop back in. But you really, I thought against Villa, you really got to see where the shortcomings are. You really got to see where the shortcomings are.
I think, what was the phrase Jürgen used? It was a golden cow, was it? What the golden cow, he said, didn't he? I think that you're right. I think what Jordan does very well, and underrated for, is he helps sustain attacks when Liverpool have got a team penned back. He picks up a lot of second balls. You see him, and it's always, you get a few groans when he plays them, but it's those sideways passes out to the right or to the left. But Liverpool didn't really have that kind of game on Saturday. They weren't really pinning Villa back. It wasn't really that kind of...
And it's why Curtis doesn't get on the ball.
It was probably 10 yards further back from that sort of thing. It was sort of, it was a little bit, you know, easy. And Curtis, you know, I don't think there's any great science in the fact that Curtis and Jordan have played, because they've got more physicality and more legs and better second balls. They're better at picking up second balls. That's why Harvey Elliott's not been in the side, I think, recently. That's why we haven't seen anything of Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keith there. Other reasons as well, but that's why we haven't seen Arthur Melo at all. You know, hasn't even got a minute, you know, and I think that's because of he doesn't feel like Liverpool will be able to have that kind of stamp on their authority. But I do think we've seen with Jordan this season, and I couldn't be a bigger fan of his. I think we've seen the decline in terms of the best bits of him are starting to decline as well, i.e. his positional play, his ability to just nick the ball and keep the pressure on. Those are starting to decline. And so that means, well, okay, if that's Steven Gerrard and that's happening, you've still got your Steven Gerrard 30-yard
free kicks and your laser passes and you win all your headers and you're strong in the tackle, you're starting to see Jordan, I think, a little bit exposed. You know, his weakness is now even more coming to light because his strengths are starting to weaken.
It's, as Neil describes it there, though, all the way through, Jay, it becomes a hell of a role. You want someone who can sustain the pressure, win the second ball, show physicality, drop back in. By the way, I want him to have a little bit of magic to pull something out from around the edge of the area. I want him to be a talker. I wouldn't mind the idea that it's someone who pops up with a couple of 20-yarders, but I also want him to be getting into the penalty area from 8-9 yards out and knocking in. And by the way, can you play right wing? That is...
And don't get injured.
And don't get injured.
Don't ever get injured.
You know, that is... No, but I think that's... Listen, this is the pressure of wanting to be the very, very best, and that's why Liverpool do need to sort of get the recruitment right, but... You know, there will be compromises here and there in roles, but all of that in there, that is what you are looking for from that right-hand sided role. And I think it is different. I think the right-hand side one, the left-hand side one are a little bit different because Salah offers his own strengths, but also offers other opportunities, shall we say, but that can throw something out. But that is what you want from that footballer now. And I think Jordan Henderson at 27 would have found that pretty tough. I think Jordan Henderson now at 32 is finding it very tough indeed. And I think, as Mo keeps saying, the video of Saturday is almost like the ultimate divining video of, right, how do we take this up a notch? Because we need to, because it's all right for your left winger and right winger not to play very well. It's all right. It's going to happen from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, I think at times we've probably asked Jordan to go and do the job that nobody else wanted to do, almost shoehorning him into the team. And that's because you want to get your captain in your team because you know he will go and do it. You know, even when he doesn't play well, he still kind of offers you something. But going back to your point there about where there's a clear gap, I mean, I completely agree. But what I would suggest and as a slightly different viewpoint is I don't think that's one signing. I think it's two. Mm-hmm. I think that you know, if you sign one player who can offer you a bit of that, you know, the goals from midfield, the inside, the link up with Salah, and then you've got a different option who can bring you the sort of the athleticism going on the outside and all that. And, you know, being linked with the players that we have been, you know, your McAllisters, your Gravenbacks, and, you know, those type of...
Taram,
yeah. You can kind of see how that could potentially work. I don't think you have to be a football genius to see that. You know, you could literally see how it's worked. But I think what I'd like to see now with Jordan, obviously, it's... We're constantly on this cycle, aren't we, where, you know, he kind of, you know, flatter to deceive, he'll then prove you wrong. And then, you know, he's had about 4 or 5 comebacks, hasn't he? I mean, I would love nothing more. And I think it's fine to say this because you've seen other teams do this with their captains and their leaders. I would love nothing more if I think he could still play a massive part. I think we just got to adapt how that looks. And he just needs to become James Milner now, I think. He literally needs to watch that fella who's been his best mate and go, well, that's me for the next 3 or 4 years. And off on a tangent slightly, I mean, a big part of that for me, what I'd be in his ear doing now if I was the manager, because I know what Ferguson would be doing, is like, stop playing for England, lad.
Yep.
Stop playing for England and focus on your recovery. Now, I can see why he doesn't want to do that, because England have probably got the ability in the squad to maybe go and do something. I don't think they ever will. But that's what I think he needs to be doing now to kind of protect his next sort of 3-4 years at Liverpool.
That's a really interesting point, actually, because I think, ironically enough, Gareth Southgate will probably still keep picking him because of all those things that you said he brings to the squad. I think he's still an important member of the squad. But if you look at the team, the actual first starting 11, it's gone beyond him now. He's been reduced to bit part roles. And you hear a lot of former professionals, I think Carroll said it a lot, when it's getting to going to away to England squads and you know you're going to get maybe 25, 30 minutes max, it does become a grind at that point in your career.
Milner stopped playing for England, didn't he, when he comes to Liverpool?
Oh, but about 31, yeah. He says. And
Scholes was 29, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Jordan strikes me as that kind of guy who never wants to say he's turning his back on his country. He's always been very proud to play for England. I think there is a conversation where you can make it so he doesn't actually have to say that. It's almost just like, we are now moving into this phase of his career. He's done fantastically well for that team. Like, when people talk about the golden years of England in this Southgate period, he's going to be prominent. So he's done his bit. He can move on. I think it's probably for the best in everyone. One other thing I wanted to add to what Jake was saying about the way we kind of do it with two players rather than one player. I think a lot of that, and the key to that might be who's on the other side at that time. So I think on the left top of the box, you can see Diogo Jota working into that role. So if you've got a Diaz as the winger and another forward in that position, then you can kind of carry a little bit more goal threat than you would have if you're asking a midfielder who's trying to do midfielder things.
Turning me on, EMO.
I'm telling you, like, if I'm in that room with Klopp, I'm saying, look, I think that's the move, because Jota at the moment does feel a little bit like he's lost his position. It's like he's not first choice in anywhere. And this could be Klopp coming to a side and going, look, you can be my guy here. You can do this job. And so then you've got him and Curtis. You can both do that job and start to rotate, and you get different things from it. And if you're getting different things from that role, when you're an Emery trying to defend it, you've got to have so many different problems.
There's something for me, though, and I think, for instance, Gakpo ends up playing there on the right-hand side, Neil, and I thought he was good all the way through. I think of Liverpool's attacking five, I thought he was the best performer, whichever part of the pitch he was a starting position. But you could see with the direct running what he could do. I mean, he should also get the lad sent off first half. It remains a somewhat ridiculous decision, and it doesn't help when you can see literally gashes on people's chests after the fact. Yeah. But putting that to one side for a minute, I thought he was constantly creative and dangerous, and you could see how he could operate either side of that box, really, depending on what Liverpool want, as well as where we've seen him predominantly so far playing in that mostly number nine position.
I like him, really do. I was a doubter of the signing, doubter of the player. I'd watched Holland at the World Cup, and I thought, I didn't really see what, you know, he scored goals and sort of attracted attention, but I didn't really see the all-round game. I'm really impressed by him since he's come to Liverpool. I think he's smart player, really reliable first touch, sort of knows when to do the first time pass, when to do to hold it. You know, he feels like he listens to what when people are firing the ball into him. I imagine people are saying time or man tight or whatever, and he feels like he adapts well to it, uses body well. And when he gets that, he's better than Firmino at that sort of spin and go, run through the centre of the pitch, and he's really hard to stop. I mean, he should have had. There was a ridiculous decision in the Leicester game after about a minute where Johnny Evans didn't even get a free kick, I don't think, but it was a yellow card straight away, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, your centre-back's booked it already. Obviously, that was a bit different. That one was, it was a bouncing ball, wasn't it, with Tyrone Mings, obviously, but he's really, really good at that and driving in. And I feel like there's more to come in that position, because I think Diaz is just a little bit feeling his way back into form.
Do you think he gets the selection right, in all seriousness? I mean, it's easy to say with hindsight, and I'm sure if the manager was sat here, he'd be like, lads, come on.
But so Jota.
I think you can make an argument for Jota. I think you can actually just make an argument that quite possibly you start four of them, as has been sort of alluded to. But let's just park that for a minute. I feel a little bit with the fact that they were going to play that high line, that Diaz just likes to come feet. I think the idea of, you know, clever movement in behind. I'm a Jota fan, I really am. And I also think the other thing is, what I said before about, you know, Villa's game at Old Trafford was defined by the fact that United scored the first goal. I just feel Jota, he scored five since he scored one. And I just feel, off an expected goal, is about 2.5. I just feel Jota's just more likely just to bang you one in the box. He's going to drop for him and all that sort of stuff. It won't look as good, but I just feel as though it's more likely to be effective. But I could be wrong.
I think Diaz is a little bit of a puzzle to solve for Jürgen, just in terms of his style of play, really. And, you know, obviously, there's a lot going on. We talk a lot about Trent and the right-hand side with Henderson and Salah, but I think there is a little bit on the left as well that needs fixed. I mean, Robertson, you know, has obviously reined in a lot of his attacking instincts. I think he's playing a little bit deeper and a little bit more sort of, you know, like an older player almost, you know, as opposed to this flying, what we've been used to him from. He's still got incredible energy. But Diaz is so different to Sadio, isn't he, in the sense of, you know, what you used to be able to do with Sadio, regardless of what he does, all the things that Diaz does, but he also had this one where he was always a target man, where you could just fire, you know, kickoff used to go to him for a start, didn't it? And he'd battle and he'd win headers and he'd do this. I think Diaz is still a little bit too far away from goal, generally. I think his general game is just a little bit deep.
My concern for him is I think he might just be a little bit more of a wide midfielder than a wide forward. Like, that's his playing style.
I think he played in a 4-4-2 at Porto a lot, didn't he? Like, that's how they played. I don't know what he plays for Colombia. I imagine he's got a bit more responsibility there, but he does. This is not sort of, you know, oh, it won't work out.
I don't think the same.
I think he's a brilliant footballer. He's a really exciting player. I just think at the moment Liverpool haven't quite got the team around that you think, right, Diaz plays with him. You know, I don't look at Diaz and Robertson and say, they're going to be, you know, mates forever type of thing.
My concern on it, Jake, at the minute with that is that Gakpo, obviously part of the job, very clearly, always was with Firmino as well, is you're going to come short, you're going to come feet, you're going to almost be more of an attacking midfielder at times. And I think, don't get me wrong, what I'm saying here has actually maybe worked for Liverpool in this little run of games. But then when you come up against a side like Villa, who decide, right, okay, we're going to push all the way, Salah's coming deeper and coming feet a little bit more often off Konate. So he's playing a little bit more like a right-hand side attacking midfielder than he is a right-hand side forward. And Diaz instinctively wants to come and play like a left-hand side attacking midfielder rather than like a left-hand side forward. So then Villa are going, well, fine, we're just going to press all the way, and no one is entirely comfortable being the other side of that in a consistent way. And that's, again, when I am sort of thinking about the side that ends up taking the pitch, I don't think anything I've described there is unpredictable, that's how it will sort of play out. And, you know, for me, and the other thing with Diaz, and obviously that's part of it, I think the manager does want to get him, wants everything he can to help him physically for the start of the next pre-season. That's a massive part of it as well. But he just also looks like he's still, obviously, he's very clearly only got 60 in him. And if you say he's only got 60 in him, I think there's a bit of a thing where he's got 35 in him first half and then 10 to 15 in him second half, and that's how you're getting yourself to 60, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see he's kind of used to being the main man, because I think natural instinct when things aren't going well, like Neil said, he does come short. He does want to kind of come and get on it. And, you know, if that was me speaking to my forwards, I'd be like, stay high, lads, because that's where you want to get your on it. And that's why I kind of like spoke at the top of the show about Arnold's thing being key in this, because if his passes break the lines, then he has got that space higher up the pitch. But because that wasn't happening, he comes deeper, then starts to look a little bit messy. There's a couple of passes that are going skew if, and before you know it, it's like systematically broken a little bit. I've said a couple of times on a couple of these shows that whilst it kind of feels like we sorted out the right-hand side, not necessarily sure that's the case, but it does on paper, I am a bit more worried about the left-hand side. I mean, a lot more worried. I mean, one of the things is I would like us to see is sign like a left-sided centre-half. You can play left-back a little bit as well, because I feel like we might need to change a little bit how we play. Yeah, and exactly. And you seen Costas crying, didn't you, at the weekend? And I thought, well, I wonder whether they figured that out and told them. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think that's where we've got to kind of push in this new era, Klopp. We kind of got to be able to interchange the players, where it's a different type of offering, because at the moment we're kind of caught between two styles, and you can find it out, I think.
Yeah, I think as well with Diaz, I think, again, to go back to Sadio, because he's got to be the reference point. I think that Liverpool needs to get back to that kind of, those kind of players being prominent, or, you know, sort of the style of those kind of players. Probably the best thing, apart from his all-round lack of weaknesses, but one of the best things was his runs off the ball were unbelievable. And I remember the goal last season he scored against City at Anfield, where the run he makes is absolutely, I think Salah puts him in and he runs.
It's a great ball, it's a great run, yeah.
It's about three different runs, and I think it's Laporte, it's just like, his head's kettled off it. It's just like, I don't know where this fella's going, but it's so clever. Diaz has got a little bit of that in him. The Leicester goal, first goal, comes from him making a pretty Sadio style run, but it's not natural to him. You can see he's still sort of learning that role. He wants the ball. I want the ball. He doesn't want the space, you know, in terms of to go and attack. And it'll be interesting to see whether, with a full pre-season, obviously back fit, bit of confidence back into his body and into his game, whether you start seeing him doing that. Because I do think there's a legitimate question around Diaz. Is he going to score enough goals? And if he is going to score goals, that's how he's going to do it. It's not going to be from cutting in and Coutinho-style shots from outside the box. It's going to be through those runs off the ball. We need to see more of them.
There is an answer to all of this. There is a large Uruguayan elephant in the room that we haven't mentioned. Like, in terms of a forward in that left-hand side position, someone who thinks goals first, yeah. In terms of someone who can occupy defenders, who can make powerful runs, Darwin Nunes. Like, how many times have we been saying this season Darwin Nunes is dying out for someone to play a high line so he's got room to run into? And this was the game.
Well, it happens a lot at Villa Park in the return fixture when Emery had come in before the World Cup, and Nunes gets in over and over.
And he missed all those chances.
Again.
And this was
like, well, he set up Bešević for the last one. Yeah.
But that's it. That's the solve within the squad. So when you've got Diaz, who is naturally going to be wanting to come short, you can obviously coach and train him to have a different instincts at different times. But if it's just something that he's not doing on that day and the team are set up against it, okay, off you come, Lewis, in you go, Darwin. That's the plan. But obviously, Nunes is not yet up to speed to be able to rely on to go and do that. So as much as getting Diaz match fit, playing him into form, kind of like they did with Diogo Jota a couple of months ago, and we were all kind of questioning that until it worked, I think he's going to keep going with Diaz. And obviously, if Nunes was there, he'd have different options to make. I think over the course of the summer, the ability of those four or five guys to build up real understanding, chemistry, and a knowledge of what it is we're trying to do at all times, that's what's going to elevate us. We talk about the guys behind them. That's the horn of a different problem. But again, we're going to come on eventually to talk about the guys who are leaving, or the guy who's left in Firmino. The underrated thing about that partnership, that trio, is how instinctive they were about everything. And you can't get to that level without it. So we're going to have to build it. And it's going to take time.
Back in a minute to talk about Firmino, to talk about the time wasting / refereeing, and to talk about how Monday morning we feel looking at the entire league table.
There's all the smiles on faces while we're talking, Ian, and we're talking about Milner, and we're talking about Bobby. Bobby Firmino was football at the highest level with a smile on her face as well. You know, I've compared him in the past to, like, as everyone else was. I'm not a genius. You know, as a Yari Littman, but we got him at his peak. And he absolutely made sure that Mohamed Salah got the best of him. He absolutely made sure that Sadio Mane was the best of himself. He absolutely made sure that Liverpool was the best of himself. Now, on the Club World Championship, Liverpool should have probably been confirmed as the greatest team in the world at least three times. We've only actually got proof of it once, and he scored the winning goal. And he didn't fancy himself. He wasn't modest. He wanted to be part of the show, but he didn't think it was all about him. So for Bobby Firmino, the way he played football was that back heel nutmeg in the corner by 202 will always stick with me. And that's like mad, because he's done so many things. And if you think about James Milner, it's like a fucking robot. You know, like, of exactly what should a pro look like? What should an old school? What's the best of a British footballer, for example? You know, with physicality, being a gentleman, it's all those things. It's like fucking James Bond for Liverpool, wasn't he? Do you know what I mean? He was all that, and he was past the sell-by date, and he kept it going. So those two are literally Liverpool living legends. Of all the things that we've ever won, they signed just before the Jurgen Klopp era. They were being on all that. Yeah. And it was just like, they won everything. And they won it with style. And they won it with grit. And they were gentlemen. They were exactly the sort of people you enjoy watching football for. You work all week. You work hard. And you want to see someone who works as hard as you on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon, and then do things you can't do. And you want them to personify Liverpool. You want them to set the example. You want them to be examples in life. James Milner, Bobby Firmino were exactly that, and they won everything in sight. Spot
up
on.
The fucking Reds. Up the fucking Reds. What a way to end. Have a lovely summer. Oh, fucking hell, we got one more game. Up the Reds.
We are back. We'll start off with the time wasting, Mo. You're someone who likes the American sports.
I do.
And, you know, you're probably wrong. But
everyone should listen to the AFS show, by the way. Come to you on the Anfield Rap.
Yes, indeed. No, it'll be. Honestly, when you talk about them, you make them sound so attractive, and then you watch March Madness, and you get compelled by a game, and then you get to the last 2 minutes of the game, and the last 2 minutes takes about 15 minutes, and it drives you absolutely mad because it's repeatedly being stopped from off the pitch. You know, by coaches, it's their decision. It is timeouts. I find it increasingly difficult. You know, I don't want to be overly dramatic here. There's been lots of changes to the way in which the sport sort of experiences hits you in the ground recently. And I'm, you know, I think the video assistant referee stuff is inevitable, and I think you can still work on the process and so on and so forth. The idea of automated offside would be no bad thing. Even that wouldn't have, you know, changed the issue at the weekend. But sort of putting that to one side for a minute, there's gamesmanship, which happens in all games. All games have elements of gamesmanship, but I am just sort of the point that if football's not careful, if this stuff continues and perpetuates, you're just at the point where you're killing a lot of the spectacle. Because part of why people like football is it's fast moving. Goals are rare, but the incident is constant. And that is moving to one side with a lot of what's going on here.
That is the thing about football that is different to literally all every other sport that I watch. Is like, just for example, if you're kind of passively watching a game of football, it's hard because you have to be paying attention all the time. At any point you're watching a game of football, there could be something interesting happening on the ball and off the ball in terms of anything. Whereas in all other sports, you get a lot of times where you can mentally just switch off. With football, it's so much harder. And it's a difficult one to solve because if you look, I'm trying to put myself in the position of the other teams here. If you think about the so-called advantages that large teams have across the game of football, time wasting and shithousery basically is the only one that those teams have got that hasn't kind of really been chipped away at yet. If you think about, they felt like they're on the wrong side of the five subs rule. We can debate that. But everything else is like that. Every new initiative seems to make it easier for the big teams and harder for the small teams. This is the one that kind of everyone is still okay with. And because of that, it's going to make it harder to regulate. Because look at the reaction to what happened this weekend. Because it was a directive. There is no doubt it's a directive. The referees have said, this weekend, we're going to do what they did in the World Cup. We're going to do proper injury time as much as it really should be. And everybody flipped out. And whether it was because maybe they didn't like announce it beforehand, which they probably should have, but it just, people were like, well, where's all this time coming from? And it was like, oh, well, this is an advantage to this team, this is an advantage to that team. And so you get back into the idea of who's it fair for, who benefits. But I think the ultimate point you made about the spectacle is probably the biggest and most important, because if this is a sport that is going to be still growing to new territories, new eyes are on it, and you're trying to convince people why to watch it, and there's just all the stoppages. And I don't have a problem with stoppages in the last 15 to 20 minutes of a tight game. I think we're all just going to have to cop for that because that's always just going to be a part of football, and it always has been. I think when you get teams who come in and are literally goalkeepers who are taking long over goal kicks inside the first 10 minutes, that's when we need to stop. That's when we need to be like, nah, that's where we need to draw the line. Because we can't say time wasting is going to go, but we need to say, guys, we need to be a little bit more manageable with this. We need to find a line.
7 yellow cards he's had this season. Martinez, the goalkeeper, which is unbelievable, isn't it? I think it's 6 for time wasting. I understand it. I'm one of the few who liked Atletico Madrid. And I thought he enriched the game rather than disgraced the game, which a lot of people thought. And I you have to have Atletico Madrid. The problem I think I've got is I think it feels like a big culture of players wanting to, the word, the shithousery is the word, isn't it? But they love it. I think players are starting to love it. I'm not even convinced it's coming from managers. I don't think necessarily Unai Emery is saying, I want you to do this and do that. I think it's players seeing other players doing it. And I mean, Arsenal have consciously, I think, tried to do it this season, using Ben White as their sort of attack dog. Newcastle have sort of consciously, I think, made a shift towards that. Maybe that's come from the assistant manager on the sideline. But I just think it's a phase. I just think it's a phase in football where players are just, it's the in thing to do. I mean, I think Ashley Young stayed down because he headed the free kick away.
Yeah.
I think Ashley Young went down. It was a header. I mean,
the ball was traveling.
It was a fast one, but it was still a header. It wasn't like a hit him. He actually headed it. I think that's the big thing. Yeah. I think that's a phase that the shithousery and that kind of time waste, and that'll be solved by, there'll be some sort of directive at the start of next season on goalkeepers going to be punished for the 6 seconds or whatever it is. But I think the one that really has got a problem and needs stamping out is these faking head injuries.
Yes.
Because I think it's going to lead to someone seriously getting hurt, or there needs to be some sort of way around this, that players can't just go down in the penalty area and just hold their heads and then everyone runs to the referee and says, you've got to stop the game, and then it goes, I'm all right, don't you worry. Like, it's not right.
It should be an automatic yellow card. Like, once the referee has stopped the game for a head injury, someone can be checking, and if you, it's clearly no contact with the head, automatic yellow card.
I saw another one as well, someone said, and I thought it was an extreme but a good idea. I think if you have one player booked for time wasting, the next player gets sent off for time wasting, whoever it is. So if your goalkeeper gets booked for time wasting and then you're time wasting again, no, that, it's a red card now for you. And even if it's your first offence, I think it's that could be a way around it. Or maybe two players. If you have two players booked for time wasting or kicking the ball away, whatever, your next one, I don't care who it is, you're off.
There's other little bits and pieces. In fact, I'll come back to you, Neil, because you'll have seen it better from the press box. Liverpool need to just be a bit smarter as well. I think, you know, both in terms of getting sucked in and giving certain free kicks away, but also in that first half period when Dean was down in the penalty area, trying to get them to put the ball out. Villa played on once anyway.
Twice
in the end, yeah. He's still down. For me, I think it's the angriest I've been with a Liverpool team in years. Why aren't you all basically stood on the edge of the box screaming for the ball? Because you'll get up for one then. You'll be told by his goalkeeper. And Salah was, for me, the worst defender. And that sounds awful because basically he had the misfortune of being right in front of me. Yeah. And it was on Dean's side of the pitch. I'm like, lad, why do you care where this line is? He was slowing his run because of the line. I was like, you just run into that space. I was furious.
I was shouting, they're all on side. Like they're all on side. To just go. that famous. Is it Alan Hansen who just runs down the middle of the pitch at Old Trafford? Yeah. And Dalglish misses. It's like, just do that. Just kick it over the top and just all run after it. Like literally. Yeah, I know.
It was the angriest I've been at Anfield.
It's brilliant because obviously when a player does that, they have to. It's the law, isn't it? That you have to have that sort of. That little sort of run. You can't just get up and leg it because everyone's on to you. But Luca Dean sort of tried to do both, and he was running. When he got up eventually, it was his back, wasn't it? It sort of had this thing, but was absolutely sprinting as well to get back into position, and Liverpool hadn't taken any advantage of it yet. But I think that was the other thing. One of their lads got a really bad injury, didn't he? You could tell. Yeah. The lad who just come on. Right, but no one had, there was no sympathy for him. It was like,
boy who cried wolf.
He clearly torn his hamstring, I think, hadn't he?
Also on that one, and genuinely, and this is back to Liverpool, have got to be smarter, he's off the pitch.
Yes. Yeah.
When it happens, he's off the pitch and Mings is off the pitch and we can take that corner.
Yeah.
We can just take that corner. And I think Liverpool, Jake, in general, you know, the managers in the stands, they've picked the referee that he screamed at to pick this game. I think Liverpool have got a bit of a, are we going to be a big set of bastards or not? Because, and I'm up for it, if that's what we're doing, that sound. But this middle ground, where it feels like we're getting all, everything's going wrong for us, and we're not prepared to be 100% hard-faced on and off the pitch to follow it all through, I feel a bit like, lads, we're either playing the game or we're not. And if we're not playing the game, that's fine. So let's play the game and not play in the game, if you know what I mean. Let's be absolutely awful. You know what I mean? These are the decisions that are in front of Liverpool. And I actually think they do need to have an answer by the start of next season.
I 100% agree. I mean, like, there's not an awful lot you can pick holes in Jurgen Klopp's tenure at Liverpool. But I think if you were being super critical, one thing that, you know, I would potentially bring to the table is at times we've probably been a little bit too nice. You know, he gives it loads to the ref, but I think certainly on the pitch, there's been times we've been nice. And just going back to the sort of time wasting things, that I've got like a bit of an interesting perspective on this, because I remember being at the game for the Mourinho-Chelsea game, the Rodgers season, when it kind of felt like we'd been found out a little bit then, and there was like a cheat code to come to Anfield and that stopped us winning the league, and a lot's been made about that. But I kind of feel like teams still kind of do that a little bit when they come to Anfield. But also, we used to do it under Benitez, didn't we? So it's funny, said Neil said he liked Atletico. I liked Atletico because I felt like I was watching Benitez's teams again when I watched them. So I think that's ingrained us a little bit. But I was also at the West Brom game when the VAR was first brought in as well. I kind of felt like football changed that day, genuinely. And I watch a lot of games at home now because I run a team. So when I'm watching it, I don't think it's as bang on as when you're there. I think when you're there, you're so ingrained with it. You might have had a couple of bevvies down. You completely lost to it. Whereas you're at home, you open your phone, you put Instagram on, you might put a bet on. You know what I mean? I think I kind of feel like that's the difference potentially with it. But whereas you're at the stadium, it feels so much more bang on and so much more relevant. Whereas if you're watching at home, it's not quite the biggest thing. But I completely agree. I think there's got to be a little bit of systematic change. But what I will say is, you can't fault these teams for trying to even it out. And you know, I was coming off watching that on a stream on Saturday going, fair play to memory.
I interviewed Emi Martinez for Goal not so long ago. I just went to his house to speak to him. I asked him about his penalty shootout, but a little bit about, the question was basically, and he laughed about it, but I said, everyone hates you, don't they? You know, like, why do you feel all that? And he was like, yeah, they do, don't they? He said, I don't mind. He said, I only do it for me team. He said, like, I don't enjoy sort of playing this pantomime villain. He said, I do it because usually I'm playing for a team that is at best has got a 60% chance of winning the game. Usually it's much less. He said,
it's so, job, lad.
How am I gonna do it? You know, so I'm taking a penalty. It's killing Mbappe taking a penalty against me. He said, like, what do you want me to do? Just go ahead, put it in. He said, like, whatever I can do. And I get it. I don't have any problem. I'm probably in a minority there. I quite like Emi Martinez because he's a bit different and he's a bit of a sort of, I wouldn't like everyone to be like him, but I think you need a few people like him to sort of
in the game of football. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think there's a difference between doing what you can to help your team, but being allowed to take it to.
Do you know why I like him? Do you know what make me like him? If we could turn back time and he played that game against City last season, then I'd like him. I'd be Emi Martinez 100%.
Rather than
Robin Olsen, Evertonian great.
The thing about the us being too nice, and I agree 100%, and I do think it's also a little bit why Klopp was trying to keep Milner in the building, because that's Milner's job still.
Well, the best thing he did, Milner. We'll talk about Milner. Elite free kick winning in his own defensive third in the last second. Didi Haman was applauding. I'm pretty sure Arsene. Whatever he was. Belly flopping, lovely.
And not only is he good at that because he knows the art of it, but because the refs all trust and respect him. Like, and that is such an underrated part of it, because I always used to think, how does he always get the free kick? Like, the amount of times you think, ooh, and he always gets the decision. Every 50-50 goes his way because he's earned that respect. And I mean, that in itself is kind of hard to replace.
Plays really well, Jake Milner, when he comes on. You know, he plays really, really well. I mean, he played like someone who's having his last game at Anfield, to be crystal clear, but you couldn't fault him at all. I thought both him and Firmino were terrific. It's interesting, we talked about maybe the emotion not working for the other players or Liverpool for the setup on the day. Those two fellas were fine. They were absolutely fine, and I thought Milner was great.
Yeah, they paid him well, weren't they? I think that's a big part of the reason why he was going. I mean, I know he let a couple of things slip, didn't he, in an interview, which I thought was quite interesting, which, you know, I'm sure we might get one to talk about. But I genuinely feel like one of the reasons why he's leaving is because he's played really well when he has played, and he hasn't, you know, in his head, he's probably thinking, I'm top of all the charts here, and I'm bang at it in training, and I'm not playing enough. So I imagine he'll go wherever he goes, whether it's Brighton or whatever, and you know, in 6 months' time, we'll be going, tell you what, Milner's doing all right, isn't he? And the same with Bobby, to a degree. I mean, obviously, Milner being in our vision, peripherally vision a little bit more, but the pair of them have still got a lot to give, I think.
Firmino gets a goal. I thought he looked as quick and sharp as he has all season, maybe even for two seasons. Again, I think that's the adrenaline and the endorphins of the day playing the part. But he looked the part. I actually think Liverpool could have got him in more. We're talking about making that run to break the line and not playing it to Henderson. I think Firmino made that run two or three times, absolutely spot on. And by that point, Liverpool didn't quite have the confidence to try and feed the ball or dink the ball or do whatever for Firmino. And I think that was a real shame, because to me, over and over, I thought he's in here. Great. And obviously, you know, tremendous servant to the pair of them. Just get to see the sheer strengths of the two of them. And as Jake says, in Milner's case, I think someone's going to get at least one really good season out of him. And if whoever it is who picks up Firmino's smart, they could get two or three really good seasons out of him as well.
Yeah, he's not 32 yet, Firmino, is he? You know, he's young enough. He feels older, doesn't he, maybe because of his style and the amount of time he spent at Liverpool. But he's 4 or 5 years younger than Lewandowski and players like that who were doing it. So I don't think he's that much older than Harry Kane. You know, so there's plenty left in him. It was great, wasn't it? The whole parade and sort of, you know, goodbye afterwards. The banners on the cop, the Ribena one was a personal favourite. I think there was just someone on our road just going, what's that? So there was this interview after the game 5.5 years ago where James Milner made a joke about Ribena, and that's what it is, you know. But great players. Jake Wright, I'm pretty sure if you got James Milner in a candid moment, he would say he thinks he should start every single game for Liverpool. Very, very close to. He always thinks he should play in midfield as well, not a right back or left back. But it's hard to say anything new about them. The two players that Jürgen's used most in his Liverpool time, that says it all for me, you know. And Milner in particular, the player that
whatever the situation, he always came back to Milner, whether it was chasing the game, seeing the game out, whether it was fullback, whether it was midfield, whether it was away, whether it was at home, whether it was in the Champions League. Usually his first sub was Milner. Usually, or his most important sub would be Milner. Took two penalties last season, didn't play many games. First penalty of each shootout, League Cup, FA Cup. You knew he was scoring them. What a player.
He was always just so reliable. And I think that we talk about that from the perspective of a football player, but also just as a character and a man. And that is why he was always so used by Klopp. I do think as well, when you think about Milner and Firmino, they have been on the outs of the team for quite some time. This has been coming, I'd say, for quite some time. But still, when they get on the pitch, you look at them and you think, they're still doing things that no one else in this squad does. Like, you look at Firmino's goal, for example. Like, they showed it on Match of the Day and they slowed it down and everything. There's only two players in the box, and one of them's Konate. like Gakpo is absolutely gassed out on the left wing. Salah's come flying out over to the right-hand side. And Bobby makes his first move when Henderson's got the ball. He doesn't get the ball. He kind of comes back into the line. As soon as the ball comes over towards Salah, he kind of creeps in front of the defender. And then he's always moving. He's the only one who's moving. And then, of course, he has to score with his heel, didn't he? He couldn't just do a normal tap-in.
I agree. Mo's made a great point there that they do things that no one else does in this squad. I still think, maybe less so this season, but up until the start of this season, I still think Liverpool always looked at their best attacker when Firmino was on the pitch, and they always looked at their safest when Milner was on the pitch. And I don't think that's changed too much this season, despite it. I always felt that I was more sure that Liverpool win the game when Milner was on the pitch if they were ahead, and I always felt like their slickest attack and play was always when Firmino was on the pitch.
It's Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain also get through the parade, which I think, you know, was good to see, deservedly involved, because Henderson's programme notes, Jake, just very clear on what a squad is, very clear on what a, you know, what it's been to all be together through this. It feels, for the first time Saturday with the goodbyes, it feels like the end of something in a way nothing else has during Klopp's tenure. It's never felt like there's a bit of a hard and fast line, what Neil said before, you know, about the two players he's picked the most are Firmino and Milner, and they will not be get other than one opportunity against Southampton. They will not be getting picked again for Liverpool off the back of this. You know, I think it is the end of something in a really, really clear way. And I think it therefore, the important part, it depends on your mentality, is whether or not you're delighted that it happened and looking forward to the start of something else, or you can be in misery and say, but it might never be that good again. That is dependent on your outlook. I'd always rather look towards the positive and find change exciting, find change invigorating. But the truth is, the essence is, no matter what your outlook is, this is change.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm probably similar to you in that sense. As, you know, I think, and also I think we've seen enough as a reference point to say, whatever comes next, we're going to go on a ride, and it's going to be exciting. But it's important just to note as well, you know, the people who've helped us get to where we've got to with that. And I thought, to be honest with you, you know, we skimmed over Jordan Henderson before and sort of said some nice things about him, some not so nice things. I mean, you read that programme note, that tells you everything you need to know about the man. He's as impressive as a captain, as a leader. And I thought his words were absolutely brilliant, to be honest with you. And it kind of took me back to, you know, sort of me playing at a very amateur level as well. You know, putting a football team together is just as much about putting a good group of lads together who can get on and spend time together every day and you know, ultimately go on a journey together. And I think Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita have been a part of that. You know, not the same part as other players, and they've gone on the journeys, but winning things, you don't just need 11 good players. You need a good squad, and we've had that, and I'm looking forward to him putting another good squad together and just going through it all over again.
We'll get to see around the good squad, Mo. Genuinely, the best thing, the thing I'm most pleased about if Liverpool are playing Europa League football is going to be watching Phil Blundell's Twitter whilst he repeatedly explains why Dublin is not necessarily a good thing. Do keep your eyes on that one across the next 12 months. I will amplify Phil at every opportunity.
You mean to say Phil's pouring cold water on something everyone else enjoys?
I'm doing so with a lot of rationality. Hell of a lot of rationality, it's worth saying. But what you can do, I mean, listen, Liverpool needs snookers now to such an extent that I'm happier just to sort of consider Sunday to be a dead rubber than do anything else. If that changes, then it'll be a hell of a ride, let's be crystal clear. But let's go from that. The one thing I would say is, you know, talking through all of this, I'll have one for the idea of 3, 4, 5, I think closer to 5 transfers than anything else. You could pick a pretty exciting Europa League group stage team, as mad as that is, and you can give players the opportunity to get used to whatever the system is now, give players the opportunity to bed in, give young players a chance. We've talked about where Henderson's role will be next season. It might be that he possibly ends up getting more Europa League group stage starts, but that's no bad thing. That happened to him going all the way back to 2012-13. He got himself back into the first team then. He's not shy about that. My point is, again, you can find the negatives. I want Liverpool playing Champions League football because I want Liverpool winning the Champions League. That's it. That's my reason first and foremost. But Europa League football, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing a bit of quality Harvey Elliott. I'm looking forward to seeing an opportunity for Joe Gomez to get genuine minutes under his belt. I'm looking forward to being able to see 4, 5, 6, a Ben Doak,
Keith Kelleher,
you know, there's footballers there who can make that tournament their own, and make that tournament their own, I think, all the way through, not just the group stage, but also the knockout stage. And I like a bit of we're all in it together, and that's what we can have some of.
I was very much on the European train from early for a lot of those reasons. I do think that it benefits more of us within the team and the squad. And it's one of those things you don't always see the benefits of immediately. Sometimes it's something that it just helps us see grow, helps us keep hold of a talent like Kelleher, for example, and all these little other little things, I think. I'm looking forward to seeing how it works out. I think The ultimate thing with the difference between the Europa League and the Champions League is that, let's face it, Europa League games should be easier to win. So there's slightly less pressure on it. And if you think about the way seasons have gone...
And we'll be seeded one.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope so. Right. Yeah, you would hope
the,
so, yeah.
Think about the way that seasons have gone. Sometimes we've fallen down when we've got into a situation where there's... Every game's important. We have to keep going. We'll have a rash of injuries and suddenly we're cobbling together. If we can have a little bit more rest, there's a little bit more space to breathe within the season, particularly at a time when we are trying to change so much, it gives us just that little bit more breathing space to be able to say, okay, I'm not calling them practice games, I'm not going to disrespect the Europa League like that, but what I would say, in the group stage, you've got more scope to try things and more scope to say, okay, well, let's see if we can get a little bit more out of this player in this position before you throw them straight into the Premier League.
Yeah, I think you also get, it keeps a bit of the authenticity of the club a bit as well, doesn't it? In the sense of, okay, we're talking about, are you going to recruit players outside the Champions League? But if you're bringing in a player to a Chelsea next season, for example, bring in a new player, if they don't have a good league season, it's finished. Yeah, yeah. You know, so at least this, you know, you've got, you can introduce a younger player to a big European night at Anfield, but it's not do or die Champions League sort of, you know, you're not going to start Ben Doak against Napoli in the Champions League even when in a dead rubber. You can do it a little bit more sort of organically, if you like, and sort of introduce them slowly, the new players, give them a taste of what it's like, you know, not just playing Sunday 3 o'clocks or Saturdays, you know, a big night at Anfield early in the season. So I think there's still some positives to have. No one would have picked it at the start of the season.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
There'll be people writing it saying, I Dominic King said on LFC TV the other day when I was on with him, said, I'm in the camp that it's better for Liverpool. I was like, no, come on. Like, in fairness,
we've all had a pipe.
He backed down. But he was on about the Dublin sort of thing and that carrot and stuff. But that's a consolation prize, isn't it? In the sense of, you know, Liverpool got a chance of winning it, got a chance of, you know, pretty crazy final if they were to get there, but really, it's a poor season this for Liverpool, isn't it? Really, they've missed out on the main objective at the start.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but I think we're talking about the Europa League there, probably being a bit too sort of disingenuous about it, because I reckon Darwin Nunez is looking at that and going, do you know what, I'm going to score 10-15 goals in that next season. And I think he was kind of signed with European football in mind, in my opinion, seeing how he played against us last season. So I think the likes of him would be massive, and ultimately go and win it.
We've done it with the Club World Cup, haven't we, in the past in this country, where we're always a little bit like, oh, what's this pointless tournament dropped in the middle of the season? And then you sort of the Brazilian lads were like, they were so desperate to win it. The Flamengo fans, I mean, that was their biggest day, wasn't it? You know, they were talking about it. There will be a lot of players who, if you said to them, oh, Champions League, they go, yeah, no, you went on the Champions League, they go, oh, Europa League's rubbish, innit? They go, no, it's not, it's boss, it's really good. Like, you know, the good teams win the Europa League.
Yeah,
I think of the difference between Spurs and West Ham. Like, Spurs have been in the Champions League quite a few times. obviously they got to the final that one time. Outside of that one time, all their other times, they get to the group stage or they get to the first knockout round and they're out, they're home. They'll have like 7 or 8 games every year. West Ham have got to the final for the first time in how, like, a generation. Yeah. Like, that's massive for them.
I'm delighted for West Ham. I want them to win it because they took it so seriously. Both the seasons in Europe,
yeah,
they've committed on and off the pitch, committed wholeheartedly to it and said, this is the party. We're getting involved in this. And I'm delighted for West Ham.
I want them to win it for Nolsey.
I genuinely have to go on and win it. Listen, that'll do us for this one. A brace from Katie Stengel meant that Liverpool got a point at Aston Villa in the WSL. And there is a title decided at Prenton Park on Saturday where Liverpool can very much rain on a Manchester United parade. Whatever you think you're doing on Saturday afternoon, I think you need to have a good long look at Prenton Park, especially if the sun shines, because then it might not be the coldest place on the planet. It's possible it might not be. But whatever you're doing, Prenton Park will be the absolute business. United will bring a mop. Don't think for a second United won't travel in numbers. It'd be great if there was a number of Liverpool supporters there as well to get behind that Liverpool side, who will be looking, as I say, to rain on Manchester United's parade as they can go ahead of Chelsea in the WSL. There'll be cameras there, there'll be all sorts there, they'll be getting loads and loads of coverage. You can be part of it. We'll be down there as well. I'm really genuinely excited about it. It's now become genuinely the game of football I'm most looking forward to next weekend because as circumstances have gone, and also you get to watch Katie Stengel, who's probably Liverpool's player of the year full stop. She's been the absolute business, scored so many really, really good goals and is a bruising number nine, the like of which Liverpool possibly could have done with on the men's side at the weekend too. Thank you very much to Neil. Thank you very much to Mo. Thank you very much to Jake, Andy Heaton and Ash O'Rourke producing for us today. It's been an absolute pleasure, even though the results, the circumstances, the game in and of itself, it wasn't. Sports Social Podcast Network.